Get ready for a journey into the heart of Bridgeport politics with In Absentia, a new podcast from Connecticut Public's investigative team, The Accountability Project. Learn about the city's past and present political dysfunction and the systems that enable it. Tune in wherever you get your podcasts.
Funding provided by Gregory Melville and Susan Fox and Kathleen Bromage.
Faith here with your podcast, Welcome Toast. A great way to lose weight is to eat naked in front of a mirror. Listen to our show in small bites or enjoy the whole thing.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
It's great to have you joining the party on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze, inviting you to join us and eat, drink, and be merry. My treasured food buddies are here, senior contributors Chris Brosberry, Alex Province, and Mark Raymond, and Robin Doyen Aiken, our senior producer. Hey, everybody.
Hey.
Hey.
So I wanted to get us going with this idea of summer pork chops.
Ooh.
You know, we don't think about lamb so much in the summer. I don't know why, because they're delicious in the summer. But in any case, I think we don't talk about pork chops enough. We talk about burgers and steak, and we will as the weeks go on. Swordfish and shrimp and all that stuff. But pork chops with that crust.
There's so many different things you can do with pork chops, too.
So, Alex Province, you have a thing you've been doing with pork chops.
So, I love cast iron fried pork chops.
Even in this season.
Inside, but run the fan. So your house doesn't get smoky. And, you know, fat pork chops look so neat at the store, but I have found that the thinner pork chops actually give more crust to, like, protein ratio. So you get, like, more of the fun brown crust, less of the dry middle. Mm. And I like bone in, salt, pepper, cayenne, dust it with flour. Meanwhile,
if you're gluten-free, you can use cornstarch to dust it. Go ahead.
Meanwhile, the oven is on 400. A cast iron pan with butter is getting nice and hot.
On the stovetop?
On the stovetop. Fans running. You have to.
Keeping the fire alarms from going off.
I gently put the pork chop in the butter. I don't touch it for 3 minutes. And then with tongs.
What are we cooking on? Sort of medium high?
Medium high.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't think you can really burn it.
So you want a crust on there.
Yeah, you want that like brown crust, not
crispy.
Black.
Crispy.
Flip it over with tongs and then immediately into the oven, 400 degree hot oven.
So you flip it and then you go into the oven to cook the other side.
The other side. And
why do you do it that way?
Well, because the gentle oven heat cooks the inside. You know, there's still residual heat in the pan to toast it.
Well, how thick was this pork chop when you put it in?
So mine, it's, remember growing up like in the 70s, stuff was skinnier.
Oh, yeah. 3/4 inch is the regular pork chop.
And then all of a sudden that style started getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
I saw one the other day that was 3 inches.
If you flip it over, won't it cook through?
Oh,
3 minutes on one side and then flip it over. Will it cook all the way through?
There's something about cooking in the oven. It's not as harsh.
Moist.
Yeah, it keeps the moisture. The intense heat
compresses
the heat
as opposed to just from one side. Yeah. And then you're getting it all around.
So,
and the key is, though, once you take it out of the oven, and it's like 6 to 10 minutes, and you know you have to use some common sense and a thermometer, I put it on a rack, and then I tent it. And then I pour out some of the fat from the cast iron, and then I make a white gravy in that. So essentially,
here we go.
Southern flour, a little cayenne, salt, pepper, brown it with some butter, some milk, whisk it together, and that on mashed potatoes with a pork chop and some green beans.
You are a Southern boy.
You
got some kind of Texas in you, I think.
I think so.
Okay, here we go. Let's talk about how to summify this pork chop, Chris.
All right. Any pork chop I have, this is one thing I learned a long time ago, and I love doing it, especially with pork chops, is I do a quick brine.
Okay. Yeah, right? So, absolutely.
And it's very simple. 3 tablespoons of salt, that's kosher salt, or a little less if you're using table salt. 3 tablespoons of kosher salt, 3 cups of water. It's real simple. Stir it all up.
Three and three.
Just remember that. And then take your pork chops and put it in that. Up to 4 hours. But if you don't have a lot of time.
What's the shortest time?
20 minutes to half an hour.
In the fridge.
Doesn't even have to be in the fridge if your water's cold.
Right.
So just boom. And that, believe it or not, starts your cooking process. right? Because that
so it goes
helps
from pink to sort of white.
It sort of pulls the starts pulling the juices out. It really gets it ready. It cooks much faster and much easier. So no matter what I do, whether I'm grilling, your method too, try this. Because in that 30 minutes, because especially the thin ones, that salt, right, will start pulling the juices out. Uh-huh. But then it reaches a point where the juices will get sucked back in. And when it goes back in, it brings that salt water in with it. Okay. And you're basically seasoning the inside.
Ooh. Now, if you So if you're someone who buys your pork in the supermarket, a lot of supermarket pork has a neutral taste. Mm-hmm. It tastes like, I don't know, nothing. It tastes like protein. It's good. I like it.
Yeah.
However, if you get, you know, small farm, family farm raised pork, that has a real flavor. Chris, would you do your brining technique even with farmer's market pork?
Yep, totally.
No matter what
it's
it
not,
is.
To me, it's not so much flavor. It's about enhancing flavor,
yeah.
right? So I'm not trying to take the flavor out of my pork chop because
I think you're trying to put it in.
I'm just seasoning the inside as well,
right.
and it cooks more evenly, stays juicier. It's to me.
Change cooking time?
Yeah, it makes it a lot faster. And as the older I, you know, my thing is the older I get, the less fuss I want. I don't want to tent. I don't want to I just want to cook and eat.
Well, tent is easy.
Tent is easy, but it's time and no fuss. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
No fuss. Just 30 minutes in the thing, boom, and you're done.
You like the bone though?
Got to have the bone.
All right. Wait a minute.
I want a shot at this.
Because, you know, everybody's always looking for another reason to use chimichurri, right? So you got that garlic, olive oil, parsley, maybe
salt.
A little paprika in there, a little crushed red pepper.
Some lemon.
Yeah, some lemon zest in there. So I will take those same brined pork chops, probably maybe an inch and a half. I do love them with the bone, like Alex does.
Flavor.
And I'll take them, I'll pat them dry, and then I will just lather them in chimichurri.
I like that too.
And
before you've cooked them?
Oh, yeah. Before I cooked them.
Tell me.
And then I'll put them on the wood-fired grill. So how I work my wood-fired grill, I've got the pizza oven right next door. So that's where I get my coals from. I get the fire started ahead of time. And, you know, I've got all those wonderful little red coals. You're not cooking over flame. And I'll move those over to the wood-fired grill. And then I lower the grate really low, maybe about 5 inches above those coals. And I'll throw those pork chops on there, and it just sizzles immediately.
Oof.
But you're not cooking over flame. You've just got these embers that are just crisping. That chimichurri and that olive oil and the garlic are getting caramelized on the outside. And then you flip them over, you do the second side, and then I throw them into the cast iron skillet and throw it back into that pizza oven for about 3 minutes.
All right, now wait.
Just to make sure it finishes off.
He keeps inviting. Notice he keeps inviting us over, but yet now he's throwing that at us.
So how do we translate this? Because we don't have your gorgeous stuff. How do we translate this for the home cook? Chris, what do we do? Could you put chimichurri on the pork chop and then put it in a hot skillet?
Mm-hmm. You could, yep.
And
you
would it be crust, careful. Chris?
Well, you'd be careful, though, because now you've got direct heat underneath. And
you've got oil. Where you can kind of replicate it is with a hibachi or a charcoal grill. Mm-hmm. You can do it similar that way.
Broiler in the oven?
The flame,
broiler would.
The flame doesn't char the meat too much with the olive oil in the chimichurri?
Well, you're not cooking with flame with the wood-fired grill or the charcoal grill. You're cooking over embers.
Yeah.
So you don't get the flare-up that you would normally
not
get from a
grill.
Gas grill.
Oh, okay.
A gas grill,
this is not
you're
going
to have way too much.
That's why you have to either, to make it for the home cook that doesn't have that, you'd have charcoal fire would work, but Alex hit it. If you're going to do it and you don't have any of the heavy equipment, the broiler.
Do the broiler, but you got to watch it under the broiler.
Door open.
Yeah.
And you got to watch it because
and not
it'll crisp up and it'll caramelize on the top.
But
and
you,
not
be cooked you know in what? Middle. You can also just do your pork chop and do this chimichurri on the side. There are
a
million recipes for chimichurri.
You know,
I love it.
It reminds me of in Salamanca, they do pinchos, and we would go to this favorite tapas place for a dollar or euro, whatever. It would be they cook lomo, like the center cut without the bone, really thin, a la plancha. So really hot iron, and then they just salt both sides, and then they'd serve it to you on a baguette, a slice of baguette.
Yeah.
And then they'd pour like a little water that had parsley, salt, and olive oil, and, nice. And maybe some garlic.
So
and,
like a chimichurri.
Yeah. And it would soak into the bread. The juice from the lomo would soak in, and you'd do a couple of those for in a beer. You'd walk out for €5.
Absolutely.
Dinner, so good.
Wow. Okay, so now if we're just doing pork chops, and we're not getting all fancy about this, but we love pork chops on the grill or in a skillet, whatever way you want to do them, broiler. What could we do with those pork chops that would make them feel of this time? So I keep thinking about a peach salsa.
Yeah. That's delicious.
Or in a pan, putting a little, with the juice from the cooking of the chops, putting a little peach preserves.
A little sweetness.
Maybe a dash of wine and a little touch of butter and just stirring that up until the wine cooks down just a little bit and then drizzling that on your pork chop. Chris, what
are
you
thinking?
I like
a salad on top, too. You ever have that? You know how they put pizzas with salads on top? If you get your pork chop, especially a nice thin one, put it on the plate, get your peach, make a little peach jam or peach salsa, or even if you just had some fig jam in the fridge, make a nice tossed salad, right, with maybe arugula, some baby greens.
Fennel.
Yeah, shaved fennel or whatever. Yeah. Toss it on, maybe some shaved Parmesan cheese. Put that right on the pork chop and eat it together that summer, right? That's the beginning of summer.
Would you do like a little bourbon and brown sugar?
There you go.
Just a, you know, because you're
good
playing
idea.
Off that sweetness and then maybe add a little peach.
You
or...
mean you're making a sauce?
He's making my salsa, yeah.
I'm taking
so
your
what
idea.
What are you thinking? What are you thinking? You're thinking peach preserves in a little pan? Peach preserves.
Yeah, maybe some butter, some bourbon, maybe some cinnamon or allspice or something, and a little scoop of your peach preserve and sort of whisk it and make a glaze. And then after you cook the pork chop, maybe just coat it a little bit and then sort of toast it just so the sugar caramelizes slightly.
And just now, put a little dollop on each one of those pork chops.
And I say treat the pork chop as if it's chicken. So I would want to do a kind of, I happen to like cilantro. Some people, you know, can't tolerate it. I like it. So I'd be doing a kind of chopped cilantro with lemon juice and olive oil.
Like fresh.
Yeah.
Almost like a cilantro chimichurri.
Right. You
without
do that.
The parsley.
Yeah.
So that just because I like the flavor.
Is anyone doing like barbecue sauce? I'm like a sucker
barbecue's
for
easy. And then there's how about the Korean barbecue?
Chicken, barbecue, anything.
Texas,
you know, where you have the
I'm sorry.
No, I love that.
The teriyaki and sesame.
Sure, all that stuff.
Is there some? Yeah, that's a great idea.
And there's a lot of store-bought stuff that you don't even have to make.
We're doing pork chops
best.
On the show.
Oh, yeah.
What about lemon? Is there some kind of treatment with lemon?
How about if you take them really thin and you bread them? And then, you make like a Milanese.
Yeah. And then fresh lemon on the top.
Pan-seared with fresh lemon. Almost like cold cuts. Cutlets.
And then I'd slice it like at an angle, and I'd serve it with whole wheat pasta with a little pesto.
There you go.
Toss it together, some Parmesan cheese,
a
little lime juice, lemon juice on top.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
or just a nice little side of tomato and cucumber salad.
Yeah, that could be fun, too. Sometimes simple is best.
Yeah.
Well, let's keep going. Let's expand the sauce repertoire because whether you've got pork roast, slices of pork that you're doing on the grill or in the skillet, if you're doing these pork chops we've been talking about thick or thin, now we're into the sauces about how we can make them interesting and keep you so that you could almost have these every night of the week if you had a pork roast, these pork steaks.
Oh, yeah.
And with different sauces on them.
Let's start with fruit because the thought of fruit with pork, it's just the first thing that goes to my mind.
Yeah.
The peach chutney, like we were saying earlier.
Apple cider.
Apple cider.
Grilled peaches.
Grilled apple slices.
Grilled peaches.
All these. So keep going as far as the sauce. What other fruit?
Grilled plums.
Blueberries.
Yeah. Oh.
Grilled blueberries.
Blueberries. Yes.
Balsamic. I like that, Robin.
Okay, Robin, that's it.
Okay.
Right? So there we're building it from the beginning. So you got your pork chop, whether you brine it or bread it or fry it, whatever. And then we move into our sauces, start with a fruit, blueberry, peaches, whatever. And then acidity is next. So Robin hit it right on the head. Something that gives it a little spark. So balsamic or lemon juice.
Chris,
right?
As a chef, help us to understand this. If we're not going to salt brine that pork chop, when do you add the salt during the cooking process and how much for a single pork chop?
If I'm going to grill, I over-season first because a lot of that salt will fall into the grill, right? Because it doesn't magically stick. So when I watch people grilling and they put like an eighth of a teaspoon on one side of a pork chop, you're like, okay, if that was going to stick magically, then you might be okay. But most of that's going to hit the grill. So I season it right before I put it on the grill. And then I season it right after it comes off the grill. Yeah. As it's resting, I hit it with just a little shake.
Both sides?
Both sides.
Are you using olive oil or vegetable oil? Any sort of
when
oil?
I grill?
Yeah.
No, I don't. No. If you brine, you don't have to. If you don't brine, do you have to? No, because pork has a lot of fat in it.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing with the flour. You don't need to flour them either because they have enough.
My supermarket pork doesn't have much fat.
Mm,
you know, only my farmers give me the fat.
We breed it out. That's the thing. Yeah.
And for some people's health issues, that's a better thing.
Yeah. But that's why I love to have the bone and then that little cut of fat on the outside there on the pork chops.
Do you ever – I hold my pork chop up with tongs so that I really make sure I get a nice
that fat
crisp
side.
On the fat.
Oh, yeah.
So that, I'm cooking it on its edge as well.
Yeah. And those if it's a coal – if you have the coals and that drips onto the fire – onto the coals and then the smoke hits it.
Oh, that's the other thing. With the wood, you get that little smoky flavor to
that
it
hits
too
it.
As well.
Yeah. Oh.
So one more sauce. Who's got an idea?
I'm thinking you use pineapple. Yeah. Like either open up a can of sliced pineapples and pour some of that sugar juice into the pan.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, take take the slices, put them in butter, and then toast them a little bit and
on
use
the
them
grill.
On the grill.
Yep.
Or even in the cast iron skillet.
In the cast iron with some butter.
Get that caramelized side.
And serve them right on top of the pork chop.
Oh, yeah.
Oof. Right?
Oh.
So you get when you're slicing it, you get a little piece of pork and a little piece of pineapple in every bite.
Can I almost do the maraschino cherry in the a toothpick? Yep. Make it very 70s style?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Very Charleston.
Let's bring it back.
Love
little
that.
Bourbon cocktail.
Right. Summer Perfect. Manhattans. Chilled Perfect. Manhattans. Frozen Manhattans.
Oh.
We got to do that. All right. More mouthwatering conversation and fun ahead on the Faith Middleton Food Schmooze. I hope you will make a charitable contribution to Feed the Hungry. There are many. We're online now at foodschmooze.org. Tell us on Facebook, how do you cook pork chops? So go to Faith Middleton Food Schmooze on Facebook. We'll be right back.
Don't let them stick. Then turn them right over because they get done quick. I'll be behind the grill doing the cooking. Just yawning cheek when nobody's looking. We got 6 kegs of beer, 3 barrels of wine. Everybody here is going to have a good time. 52 pork chops sitting on the grill. Don't eat them, or we sure will.
Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread. Beans and cornbread had a fight. Beans knocked cornbread out of sight. Beans. Cornbread said, now that's all right. Beans. Meet me on the corner tomorrow night. Beans. I'll be ready. I'll be ready tomorrow night.
You know, there are live listeners. If you're a live listener, that is so fantastic. If you are someone who wants to listen on your schedule, we call it the podcast copy. It's just a free copy of the show. We will send it to you. Just go to foodschmooze.org. You sign up once and it comes to you in your inbox. There's no tricks. There's nothing about it. I am with my treasured food buddies, Chris Prosperi, chef and co-owner of Metro Beast Restaurant in Simsbury, Connecticut. Wine broker Alex Provence, wine broker Mark Raymond. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Faith.
If you are going into New York, there is this place called Pop Bar.
Do tell.
It's on Carmine Street. Sounds like it has to do with alcohol, but it doesn't. It's about ice cream. Pop Bar has gelato that comes on a stick. But they're doing this thing where they do an ice cream sandwich variation on a stick. I mean, have you ever had that? I realized I have never had an ice cream sandwich on a stick.
Not on a stick, no.
So they take these cookies, these chocolate cookies that are kind of crispy crunchy, and then they smear them with chocolate. And then applied to each side of the bar, they've got either ice cream or sorbet or whatever you want. You could dip it. They dip it in chocolate for you if you want. They'll roll it in nuts for you after that. You can kind of play with it, but it's called a Popwich. This is an ice cream sandwich on a stick. And
I like that. I love that.
So that's at 5 Carmine Street at Pop Bar in New York City.
Gotta make sure you walk by that in the summer.
Yeah. It's quite an amazing place, isn't it? It's just incredible. Anybody doing avocado on the grill?
I haven't done them on the grill.
Yeah, I make grilled avocado guacamole. Yeah.
Oh, I like
really?
That.
Really?
Yeah. How does that go?
I grill the avocado. So I cut them in half, and then I don't scoop them, right? I leave them in the shell, and I just grill that cut side.
Cut side down.
And I just grill that one side to get it nice and charred. And then I take onions and tomatoes and put them on the grill.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
right?
Yeah.
So that's done. And then I take a little bit of garlic, throw it in the food processor, and then I throw all that other stuff in the food processor.
So it has a smoky quality?
It has a smoky, charred quality. And I can't take 100% credit for it because I got it from a friend of mine who wrote my favorite cookbook on earth. A man, a can, and a plan. Boy, it's so good.
You adding any smoke chipotle pepper?
No, because you get enough smoke off the grill. All you do is put it in the food processor, and then I put fresh lime and some salt.
And does it make it chunky enough? Do you like
just,
it chunky
I pulse.
Smoke?
I just either or. If you like it, yeah, that's the pulse.
You got to
then you don't. Then you get it chunky, or you go and then you get it smooth.
Oh, you can't do the because then it's creamy.
Well, that's some people like it that way. I don't. I like it chunky.
I like it chunky.
And this is on tortilla chips.
Could you hand cut everything and just kind of
totally hand cut everything? Yeah, but I'm lazy and I put it on the food processor.
Any sour cream?
One more time.
No.
Three times.
A little sour cream?
No, just plain.
Well, the sour cream keeps it from going getting brown.
So does the lime. Yeah, but so does the lime juice.
The lime juice.
Cilantro?
Oh, forgot the cilantro. Thank you. Yeah. Big handfuls of cilantro. Yeah.
And if
like
you
at least
don't
three.
Like, this is like lavender. Half the population likes it, half doesn't. What could you use instead of it? Cilantro.
What could
parsley?
You use instead? Yeah, you could use parsley.
Like flat leaf Italian.
Or I would just not even
bother. Just leave it out.
Yeah, I'm with Mark on this
just
one. Just go without. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't need it. I mean, if you love cilantro, it adds something, but if you can't eat it, then just
leave
it.
Did you put a little tomato in?
Grill the tomatoes.
You did, okay.
Yeah. Grill tomato, avocado, and red onion. I grill
I throw corn. Sometimes
grill the corn
roasted
and then
corn.
Throw
grill
it in
the corn
or roast
on the cob
absolutely.
And then
what is that powdered Mexican cheese called?
Cotija.
That you'd wrap roll like street corn
and you
in.
You put it, you shave it, you grate it. And then you do the street corn by rolling it in the
nice.
Aspic.
My favorite.
Oh, I know. It's so good.
Street corn.
Okay, so can
so
I just
wrong.
Say, coming...
Street corn.
Stay. Well, it's good, though, because it's starch plus protein. I think that's good. So coming up in the next segment, if you are into the gorgeousness of Cuba, some people say Cuba. Cuba right now,
Cuba.
It is such a beautiful place because of
untouched.
That patina of age and... And, you know, let's face it, yes, poverty. So I don't want to, you know, make this into an Alice in Wonderland story or a fairy tale. You know, that patina comes from poverty and, you know, being under-resourced, and it turns out to be gorgeous. There's a book we have coming up in the next segment that is so utterly beautiful in terms of photography and food.
Yeah, agreed.
In Cuba, some of it fusion mixed with how would we update it in our culture. So it is really worth sticking around to see that. And you're going to like some of these recipes. To keep it international, Alex, not so long ago, went on a trip to Spain. And we were all just, we wanted to be there with him so much.
Hours talking about it.
Okay, So yeah, where'd
so
you go?
So much fun.
And
so
tell us in English.
Yeah. ¿Qué es que hablo español? Vale. Pues hemos pasado ya en Lisboa por el coche. So it was so funny after 5 days of speaking Spanish. You know, they're such happy people. We like had so much fun. So we flew out of JFK, landed in Lisbon. Such an easy flight. Rented a car. And today, all these cars have GPS, so you can't possibly get lost.
And where were you going?
2 hours right on the way to Sevilla from Lisbon. The very first town is called Rosal de la Frontera, and it's right next to where all the...
Rosal, like in red?
Rosal, like as
oh,
in...
Oh, Rosal.
Yeah, Rosal.
Like street? I'm not doing my role.
Yeah, Rosal.
Rosal?
De la Frontera. And Frontera is just
frontier.
Border. And it used to be called, which was pretty, Rosal de Cristina.
So this is not so far from Lisbon.
Yep. So it's 2 hours from Lisbon, right on the Spanish border. It's a festival called Romeria.
Spanish border with Portugal?
Yeah. It's the very first town in Spain. And the name is Rosal de la Frontera. And they celebrate their patron saint, which is San Isidro. And he is the saint of
agriculture, the saint of laborers. So he's depicted with like wheat stalks, and it was the most beautiful thing I've experienced.
And what happens in the town when you get there?
Well, Spain is famous for Andalusian horses, and they're the dancing horses that, like, you know, lift up their feet.
Absolutely.
Huge,
like,
muscular necks, like braided hair on, you know, manes. And all the gentlemen come out with their court of the best hats, these like flat hats, beautiful tailored suits, and they're so like macho.
Those
like,
short jackets.
Yeah, beautiful short jackets, braided. And they make these horses dance. And so they do this pilgrimage, and it starts off in town, and then it hikes out 8 kilometers out into the countryside. And all these different families will have set up their casetas, which are equipped with refrigerators.
What
and
is a caseta?
It's like a
portable kitchen.
Like
a tent?
Like a tent, like a big, enormous tent. But now they've been made more permanent. And what you do is you go from tent to tent, and the people are so happy to have you, they'll give you wine, and they're drinking Manzanilla, you know, like the fino sherry from Manzanilla.
Yes.
And they have all these tapas, and you just...
Do they have to know you?
It's such a small town, and my grandparents are from there. Chris and I were laughing because we're related to everyone there. You know, you go around, and they all know my mom.
So
but,
if
but
those
they do
of
not
us
have to
who
know
are
you.
Listening to you right now went there, they would just be
no,
so...
No, they are so gracious and warm. They're so happy to have you. So you just walk into these tents. As an American, it feels sort of... You're self-conscious thinking, do I know these people? But you walk right in, and they'll just give you an icy cold beer, a glass of Manzanilla. They'll just put out all this food, and this food just keeps coming and coming and coming. What happens is you can't eat anymore because you've just like been from all these tents. You've been eating all day long, but they will not let you not eat. So they'll whatever glass of wine they have, they'll dump it out and give you a fresh one. And then, you know, the jamón ibérico comes out, the cheese comes out. You know, speaking, I know you love Spanish potato chips, but they have the most golden potato chips that are like fried locally, what they call like a caseta with the sea salt. They're fried in olive oil. They're so good. I felt like a pig. I'm like eating it, like they're watching me eat because they're so delicious.
I feel like if we go, we should just let everyone know that we are friends of Alex.
Oh, we'll go together.
We're family.
So it starts on a Saturday with the pilgrimage. It goes all night long, and then all day Sunday, all day Monday, and then you actually hike back out. And there's tractors pulling like these floats, you know. And so by this time, Matt and I are tired, so we're sitting on the front of the float, you know, being pulled by a tractor. And,
I've just got this visual.
And the tractor, you know, these flatbed floats have food. So everyone's eating and drinking while you're on these floats going by. So you're not waving at people. You're just stuffing your faces. And then the horses are following us, and they're in front of us, and they're dancing around us. And all the gentlemen and las damas as well, they go and they drink their sherry on horseback. And they'll have you know, they'll elect like a mayordoma.
That's what I wanted to do. My shirt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, it's so elegant. And they're such gifted equestrian people, you know, to be able to ride around with a fino sherry glass and make
and
with a dancing horse and not spill it. And it's in the countryside, so it's surrounded by the olive groves and cork groves. And
so jamón ibérico.
Jamón ibérico.
In the country, if you can get the real thing. I mean, there are people who devise ways to smuggle it into the United States. But the real thing is wildly expensive.
You have to go
and
there.
You
so
can't get the real stuff. It's interesting. The pigs are these little black pigs. It's a wild boar. It's not like a big white pig that you'd see that you'd make bacon out of. It's a wild boar that's Iberian. It has coarse black hair. It's called pata negra because their little hoofs are black. They have black nails, and they're black and small. Mm-hmm. They raise them free range. They are not fed.
Yeah, they don't even feed them, right?
They're not fed anything. So through the summer months, they're eating grass and bugs and whatever they can find. And then starting in the fall, they eat exclusively acorns.
Because they're
like from
out of the
a cork tree. And all they do is eat kilos and kilos and kilos of acorns, and then they're slaughtered and the meat is cured and it's aged for quite some time. The fat almost dissolves at room temperature. So when you see a beautiful slice of jamón ibérico, the fat is this beautiful creamy white color. Put it in your mouth and it almost dissolves like
it's
coconut
butter.
Fat
it's or
just
butter.
Dissolved.
Yeah.
And it smells like so biota, like the acorn.
You could spread it on toast.
It is the most special thing. So we're not allowed to bring it back. So Matt and I are eating it on the plane, and I'm like so like compulsive with liking to be clean. I'm pork covered fat. With like pork, you know, fat.
He's
like
in it's a all hazmat
over,
suit.
It's all over like the tray.
No, it's like an attic.
it
He's
is
a ham
such
addict.
Special, special
you
stuff.
See the picture Stand of back, his face. People.
And these good, it's like good cheese. They'll have the little crystals. Mm, you'll see these little white the aging, dots yeah. from the tyrosine, the amino acid. Oh my gosh, we had such a fun. This was an experience, and the people are so warm and loving. They grab you and kiss you, and there's no
was
violence.
Was it because you were family?
They're just loving. They're happy people. They have nothing to
and
be upset
so drunk.
About. Yeah, you don't know. That was us, probably. They drink all day, so it's less binge drinking. But I think you know if we counted,
steady
you know who knows. I think wow. I broke the breathalyzer.
That's it. It's a perpetual drinking day, yeah. so you know.
Well, and no one's obviously driving. And
right.
It's a festival.
No,
except
no,
for the guy
no, no.
driving the horse.
No. So
the
Europe
tractor.
Is Europe is incredibly
the
tough on drinking and driving.
Yeah,
and
no,
we were coming
no
back to the village, and they were stopping all the traffic, and everyone will tell you Spaniards are very conscientious of drinking and driving, and they'll tell everyone do not drink and drive. It's part of their culture. It was really fun for us to see how loving and to see, you know, it was very transgenerational. So you see the 70-year-olds teaching flamenco. It's full of song and guitar playing.
Where did you sleep?
So the casetas have beds, and then you know, so a lot of people stay there, and we stayed
it's
in
like camping.
In, yeah, so they'll have a little bathroom set up, and you stay out. Some people don't even sleep. Like my cousin Miguel, Angel, I was like asking where he was going to sleep. He'll stay up all night, and they'll just keep going
they
for
laugh
3 days.
You sleep? We don't.
Yeah,
sleep
he says
this
they'll find a, they'll find a place to sleep.
Well, just, so if a tourist came. Where would we sleep?
If you want, it's amazingly affordable. So there's some hotels and some really nice ones in the area you could stay at. But Spaniards, if you go, they will embrace you. If they see you as being a foreigner and not being comfortable or speaking the language, they have this obligation to like want to grab you and bring you into the crowd. You will be treated so well. There's something, it's just their culture. They will not allow you to feel lonely in a
to
corner.
To not be involved, absolutely.
Mm-mm, nope, and as soon as they hear that you know that you're new, they will go out of their way to make sure that
right
you
in.
Have yeah. a special yeah. time.
Absolutely.
They like want
wow.
you to leave having loved
all right, tell us, because I can imagine you're sitting there listening to the story, and next we're going to take you to Cuba. This is armchair travel. Say the name of this area again as we're in this final
okay.
minute.
So the town is called Rosal de la Frontera. The festival is called Romería. And if you go on YouTube, you can actually see some of the videos that
wow.
people take. You know, it's similar to the Feria in Sevilla and some of these other.
And it's in the spring every year.
Always May 15th, the weekend before May 15th.
Okay. So it'd be funny I know we're a little late on this, but I just didn't want that to get away because I thought, we have to all make plans to do this next year. Very quickly, Ariston Olive Oil, you know, we've talked about them on the show since they brought the olive oil here from Greece, and I mean here to our region. They have started this new thing for stores where they're going to have this machine that mixes up the vinaigrette for you. And you press here or you press there
like
for
that.
This much olive oil of their olive oil from Greece.
That's a great
which
idea.
Is as close to
yeah.
organic
yeah.
as you can get.
Emulsifies
and then their
it.
Yeah, and then their
cool.
balsamics, their balsamic vinegars. In other words, they're going to supply stores with dressing centers.
That's amazing.
Isn't
wow.
that
I can't
a
wait to see
brilliant
that,
concept?
That's why I love that company, because they're always thinking
Ariston
outside the box.
Olive oil. I love that olive oil. That's my home olive oil. All right, coming up, we're going to take you armchair travel to Cuba. Some of the most beautiful photographs you've ever seen. But in any case, we're going to talk about the food in Cuba just as they have it and we can make it here. But also, when it requires our ingredients, they do a fusion version. Okay. By the way, in New Haven, there's a Cuban restaurant, Sol de Cuba.
Love it.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We love the local. That's why I mentioned that restaurant. Please support your local food growers and food makers for on-demand podcast delivery of the Food Schmooze Party every week. And to find all of our curated recommendations, go to foodschmooze.org. And of course, we'll be right back. Hey. This is the Food Schmooze Party, offering the richness of life, coming to you in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including Westchester County, the East End of Long Island, of course, the Hamptons. The senior producer is Robin Doyon Aiken. To hear the show on WNPR, it airs Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Podcasts and our curated recommendations are always online at foodschmooze.org. We are going to dive into a cookbook now that we have fallen in love with. It's a new cookbook, and there are three people involved. We have among the authors Dan Goldberg, who's the photographer for this book and is a guy who really knows food. That's why we snagged him. His book is called Cuba, Recipes and Stories from the Cuban Kitchen. Of course, many of us are intrigued with what's going on in Cuba, what it looks like, what's, you know, it's been such a long time where we're separated. All of this, a lot of people going there to experience it. These recipes, especially one we're going to talk about, we have them at our site. And these photographs have made me drool, not only for the food, but drool for a taste of what Cuba is really like. Among the most beautiful, there's such knockout photographs. This is a coffee table cookbook, I have to tell you. I don't think it's meant that way, but
so
it is
pretty.
Gorgeous. Yes. Absolutely gorgeous. And that's to the credit of Dan Goldberg, the photographer and food guy. Welcome to the Food Schmooze.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. So, Dan, have you been going to Cuba for a long time?
We've been traveling to Cuba for the past 5 years on three different trips. We've gone there and met a lot of the Cuban people, stayed in their homes, started collecting recipes and doing our research and photographing their food and their culture. And a personal project with Andrea Kuhn just kind of turned into this five-year-long cookbook. And here it is today.
I don't care how you answer this because I'm not that way in this case. There will be plenty of chances for some people to do recipes that are strictly authentic, and there will be people who do a kind of fusion where they fool with the recipes a bit to make them appeal to a traditional American market. Which are yours?
You know, they're a combination of both. These recipes are from the people's homes. People invited us into their homes and gave us their recipes. They started cooking for us. I mean, complete strangers would allow us to come into their house and take pictures and ask us to stay for dinner. And then we started asking them about their food and, you know, where it came from. And so these recipes are from the locals mainly in Havana, but some of them we've put a little bit of a twist on and put a little bit of our spin on as well.
I'm about to talk about one with Chris because we asked Chris if he would make this, and it is the Caribbean black bean burger. Is this an authentic black bean burger, or did you put your spin on it?
This is authentic black beans from Cuba merged with a fusion, for lack of a better term, with the burger. So we put a little spin on that burger and gave it a little bit of our flair as well.
This is a thing, though, in Cuba to serve these black bean burgers. I've eaten my share of black bean burgers. I've made them up, these recipes, myself. This is, without doubt, the most delicious black bean burger I have ever, ever had. So whatever you're doing with the fusing, stunning.
So good.
So this is a Caribbean black bean burger with a pineapple avocado salsa. Chris, tell us how quickly it came together.
Yeah, it's so easy. You take black beans, you put them in a bowl, you take a little bit out and reserve
them. Are
these
canned? Can we use
canned? I use canned, but you can use both, either or, cooked beans or canned beans.
Okay.
You take a little bit out and you put it in a food processor, right? So you have the majority of the beans in a bowl. You add some diced red pepper, diced onion, garlic, some chopped cilantro, cumin, and salt, and you mix that all together. Then you take the little bit that you set aside, you throw those beans in a food processor with one egg white, and you spin it up. Then you combine it all together.
So the egg white is the glue.
The egg white is the glue, and you kind of mash it. I like they say in the recipe, it's satisfying to use your hands for this. So I did, and it was. And then you sprinkle in a little corn flour just to tighten it all up. And that's it.
To give a little heft.
Yeah, and to hold it all together because it's a little wet with the egg white. And then you form it into six patties. I did them two at a time in a nonstick pan. And as they came out, right onto hamburger buns, and then it's served with this pineapple avocado salsa.
Oh,
that's just as easy.
Can we talk about the salsa?
The salsa,
I would, Put it in barrels and keep it in the house.
Forget ketchup.
And, that's, right. and there's nothing to that either.
So
chopped up pineapple.
Yeah.
Chopped up avocado and chopped up red onion.
And cilantro for those and who then, like it.
Yeah, cilantro, garlic, squeeze of fresh lime juice, and a little drizzle of honey, and mix it all together.
That's so the
it.
Burger goes on your bun if you're having a bun, and then the salsa on top. If there's no bread, you just do the same thing. It is a meal, and it is
satisfying.
Absolutely. We're all
it is delicious.
So good.
Delicious.
Dan.
And everyone knows I'm not a big non-meat burger, but you're right. That is probably one of the best black bean burgers I've ever
and
had.
And can I tell you, not only in the book, but thanks to Dan and his crew and the publisher, their generosity at our website, foodschmooze.org. Schmooze spelled like school. S-C-H-M-O-O like the cow, Z-E. Foodschmooze.org. So at our website with information about this book, which I highly recommend. Dan, can we talk about the lobster roll, the Cuban way, Vedado lobster roll? What does Vedado mean?
Vedado is a neighborhood just west of central Havana where we enjoyed these lobster rolls, and it seemed like the perfect name for it.
And how are they different from what the classic lobster roll is in New England?
Well, their bread is different for starters. So their bread is a bit crispier, and we butter the bread and toast that, and it just gives it a really rich flavor with that lobster.
Okay, and this is a lobster salad that is made with, let's go through, but for cilantro lovers, there's cilantro in here. I suppose you could substitute parsley for people who can't stand cilantro. So this is, you either get the lobster meat or you're cooking up some lobsters, mayonnaise, traditional in the for people who like the cold lobster salad, fresh cilantro, chopped green onions, both the white and the green part, celery diced up. The lime juice is a twist, right?
Yeah, and the lime juice really gives it that hint of acid that I think makes this the perfect sandwich.
Terrific. And so you would mix that up as a salad. Everybody, you know, people know how to make chicken salad.
Right.
Just put these things together, chop up some lobster meat, and there you go. Just so their bread is more hefty.
Exactly. It's a bit more hefty, but I like to butter that bread and toast it in a skillet and just get it nice and warm and flavorful.
Yum. I'm with you there.
Yeah,
I am
so
with you there.
That's how a proper lobster roll should
food.
Be.
Absolutely.
I do the New England lobster roll, and I first butter the outside, you know, on the flat side, and I toast it in a skillet, too. So I'm thrilled to hear you do that.
And I like the twist. I know you're a traditional.
No, I do.
Do you like the twist? I love the twist.
I would
you
eat lobster care. Rolls 50 ways. Like that. So this book is like a trip to Cuba. I have to
the
say
photographs.
That. So, Dan, tell me about the photography before we get to the mojito cake. which has a rum infused whipped cream and lime zest, by the way. It just looks so unbelievable. These photographs, what did people think as you came in with you weren't just using natural light, right? You were
this is all natural light.
It's beautiful.
No.
Yeah,
it's surreal.
The light in these homes were so beautiful, and the way they funnel light through an apartment building, and we really tried to make this as natural as possible, and there's just wonderful colors and patina in Cuba, and we took that opportunity.
So there's a thing I have about Cuba, and I just want to see how you feel about this, being such a visual guy. When I go to Italy and I see that things are left, now, there's not as much damage in most places as there is in Cuba, with time, because there's been some care taken. But the faded quality from the sun and from years and use, people are smart enough to leave it alone. And what would break my heart is if, as Cuba changes, people came in and tore all that down or painted over all that beautiful patina. What do you think about that, Dan?
I think it will absolutely change, but I completely agree that that patina and that beauty and those years of peeling paint is what is so sexy and beautiful about it.
Oh,
and that, unfortunately, I think at some point when they modernize it, it will definitely lose some of that character. And I feel like we had the great opportunity of being there at a time before it was changing.
Beautiful. Yeah. They're in Italy sometimes, when they change a building, they'll leave one section the way it used to be and even cover it with glass to say this is what it originally looked like in respect to the past. Even if they did that, I wish someone would appoint, you could do this in Cuba,
yeah.
a director of aesthetics, you know, for the entire place.
I feel like an interior designer needs to do a fan deck of all those colors, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
I don't know if you could achieve it, right? Mm-hmm. It's got that patina that is real.
The chipping and the...
You can't just like sandpaper off the edges and say it's old, you know, it's just... Okay,
beautiful.
Mojito cake with rum-infused whipped cream and lime zest. Mm. Oh, my goodness.
Good.
So let me just run down the ingredients, and Dan, tell us how this comes together. So all-purpose flour, baking powder, salt, butter, sugar, eggs, vanilla. These are the usual suspects. Lime zest, rum extract, freshly squeezed lime juice, and whole milk. Then there's going to be a lime mint syrup and the whipped cream, which has some rum in it. Go ahead, Dan.
The rum-flavored whipped cream and the lime mint syrup is so delicious. It brings me right back to Havana. And they're two of my favorite things, mojitos and rum. So why not make it into a dessert?
Yeah.
Yeah. So is this your creation, or do they serve this in Cuba?
This is a creation from cakes we've had and took flavors together and kind of created this based on inspiration from Cuba.
Would people in their homes make a cake like this?
I think for a dinner party or for a festive event, they would, yes.
Wow. Once again, at our website, and thank you, Dan and company, foodschmooze.org. Here's another one. This is Café Cubano Batido. So this is combining two of Cuba's most beloved ingredients, coffee and rum. So this is a cinnamon spiked drink and, you know, kind of perfect for the season we're in. Go ahead.
Think of a milkshake with rum in it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
When I'd get up in the morning, I'd go to the people's homes. They'd serve these tiny little Cafe Cubanos for about a penny, and they're super strong coffee, and it would be my morning ritual. And that... you know, in a milkshake with the rum. And this is a traditional Cuban recipe and delicious on a hot day.
Yeah, and so this gets put in a blender and ice goes in here. And so it is terrific, although I can imagine that you could do a hot version in the wintertime, which is really sounds good to me.
Yeah,
all of it.
I feel like you could do a dinner party using this cookbook, a Cuban-themed summer party.
That's a great idea, Alex.
Paint your wall.
Yeah, really, what a great idea. Okay, so Dan, before you dash, by the way, that Cafe Cubano Batido, also on our website, foodschmooze.org. Dan, there is talk that goes around from people who've been to Cuba that the economy has been in rough shape to a degree in terms of food for quite a long time. And so people are only able to do so much, and you get the impression, and yet so generous when strangers come or when family comes, people somehow magically pull things together and come out with these meals. So to what degree is this true? Has the economy gotten better and people can afford to cook more things? How does it work?
I don't know if the economy has gotten better yet, but the people there care about their friends and family, and the communities get together and they help each other out and they cook for each other, and there's a doctor in the neighborhood and a mechanic, and they all share their trades with one another, and they care about living in the moment and their time with each other, and so they cook together and eat together and spend their time together and really enjoy the moment. And so there's a lot of breaking bread with people and a lot of enjoying meals together, and they're not necessarily fancy meals, but they're super simple, like you know, the rice and beans and just really good simple food.
I like that, and I like this idea of that it's about the sense of communion with other people, and nourishment too, with the deliciousness of simplicity, all of it together. I just really like that. I mean, when we go to Italy, I think that's a lot of what we enjoy.
Absolutely.
So same thing. Well, I saw your paella, and when your head's on the pillow at night, do you think to yourself, can't wait to get back to Cuba to have X? What's the X?
The beans are probably my favorite black beans in the entire world, and it's just simple.
Wow.
I won't lie, because I love their rum and their mojitos as well. But honestly, the simple black beans are something I crave on a regular basis.
That is something. And are you a vegetarian?
Absolutely not.
Oh, wow. Okay. Isn't that something? Hey, thank you so much for your generosity, your talent especially, and to your teammates here, Andrea Kuhn and Jody Eddy. The book is called Cuba, Recipes and Stories from the Cuban Kitchen. Thank you so much for being with us, Dan.
Thank you, Faith, and thanks for giving me this opportunity to talk to you guys about the recipes in the book.
We are on WNPR Thursdays at 3 and Saturdays at noon. Weekdays, listen for my 60-second food schmoozes. You know the slogan, never eat more than you can lift. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton. Thanks for listening to the podcast on your schedule. And when you need a little party in your life, we're here and online all the time at foodschmooze.org. And of course, also on Facebook at Faith Middleton Food Schmooze.